Welcome to another edition of Business Matters here on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Well, this week I'll be looking at the wind energy sector, and in particular the potential in the years ahead. I've been speaking with Justin Moran, Director of External Affairs with Wind Energy Ireland, the body that represents more than 200 members in the sector who employ around 6,000 people. Well, coming up, we'll hear about the challenges ahead for the wind energy sector and also the considerable opportunities that exist both onshore and indeed offshore. Roughly one-third of Ireland's energy now comes from wind, and this figure is set to rise in the years ahead. I began, though, by asking Justin to give me a snapshot, so to speak, of where we are in Ireland at the moment in relation to wind energy.
Thank you very much for the invitation to join you and your listeners, Chris. So, to give you a very quick overview, where we are at the minute, about a third of Ireland's electricity every year comes from Irish onshore wind farms. That helps to deliver clean, affordable electricity to Irish families, to Irish businesses. And since we started building wind farms in a significant number in the 2000s, it's delivered savings to Irish electricity consumers of a little bit under €1 billion while reducing our reliance on imported fossil fuels. So what we're trying to do is to accelerate that, to continue to develop and to build new onshore wind farms. But we're also, and this is a really exciting moment for our industry, trying to roll out the development of offshore wind energy. Some of your listeners might be aware that in 2004, we built what was at the time in Arklow Bank, one of the biggest offshore wind farms in Europe. It was the first time we'd used technology that advanced. But unfortunately, Ireland kind of decided not to go down that road, and other countries moved ahead and developed thriving offshore wind energy sectors. We're keen not to make that mistake again, so offshore wind energy is a priority for us. We currently have five different offshore wind energy projects, all located on the east coast of Ireland, who have submitted their planning applications, and we're hoping to see those projects move forward in the coming years, but that will depend on, you know, how long it takes for a planning decision to be made. And in the meantime, we will continue to try and roll out onshore wind, but also the other technologies we need, like battery storage and solar, to try and eventually get us to our, I suppose, our overall aim, which is an Irish electricity system that is independent.
And if we take Donegal, I think the first wind farm here was, I think it was 1996, and it was in Barnsmore Gap. And when it went up, there was a big fanfare about it. Prior to that, there was a Bellacarrick in Mayo, which was a relatively small wind farm. And Donegal, certainly the early years, we were one of the biggest wind farm counties. Donegal's dropped down the list in terms of the rankings a little bit, but it's still one of the major contributors.
Oh, it absolutely is. You know, we have a little bit over 5,000 megawatts of installed wind energy, and more than 450 of that would be in Donegal. It's a critical county for us in terms of developing projects, and in terms of trying to ensure that we maximise the amount of power that we can get out of the county. And it's a big contributor to the county itself. The most recent figures that I would have seen from maybe 2023, wind farms in Donegal paid a little bit over €3 million in rates to the county council. So that helps to, you know, pay for roads, it helps to pay for libraries, it helps to pay for local services and amenities in County Donegal. So that's a big contribution of more than €3 million goes into the county every year. And then on top of that, there will be additional money in community benefit funds. But one of the challenges, and you're right to observe it, Chris, that it's maybe not as targeted a county as it would have been in the past for the development of onshore wind energy. One of the big challenges we have in Ireland is the challenge of getting the electricity from where the wind farm is located and where it's produced to where it's needed. And to do that, we need a strong electricity grid. Last year, about 14% of the electricity that wind farms could have produced was lost because the grid wasn't strong enough to take it. So the wind farms were instructed to shut down or to stop generating electricity. And that 14% is an Irish national figure. It will be higher, unfortunately, in the northwest. So that's why projects like the North-South Interconnector, which is a very large, powerful overhead power line that will connect Meath and Tyrone, is really badly needed. That's why other grid reinforcements are needed. So if we're going to try and get the electricity that we produce in Donegal out of there, if we're going to try and attract foreign direct investment into Donegal, then we need a stronger electricity grid.
And just to explain, if a wind farm is closer to where the electricity is actually going to in the end up, that's why we have sort of the lopsided effect in the country, in that most of the power needs are sort of on the eastern side of the country. So it makes more sense if the generating stations are closer to the actual main markets rather than being in peripheral locations. Is that fair to say?
That's 100%. Couldn't have put it better myself. But the challenge that we'd have for wind is, as I'm sure your listeners don't need a man in Dublin to be telling them, Tyrconnell is a very windy county, and so is the west coast of Ireland. So many of the best wind energy development are along the west coast north. So that's where we're getting the power, and we need a stronger grid to be able to move it from there to the bigger towns and cities where that power can be used.
Now, we hear a lot about difficulties with the planning process. Most people are aware of the housing difficulties there, but this also applies when it comes to the development of wind farms, and farms are appealed to on board Planola for one reason or another. There is quite a big pipeline of projects, Justin, of wind farms that are at some stage of development at the moment.
There certainly are. So we have a very large number of wind farms that are happily out of the planning system, and we're hoping to move forward with those in the months and years to come. But you're absolutely right to identify it as a real gap. There was a report carried out in Europe maybe two or three years ago now, the Mario Draghi report, which was looking at competitiveness across Europe. And one of the points that it made was that Ireland has the slowest planning and consenting regime in the European Union for wind energy, and one of the slowest for solar power. And what we've really needed to see happen over the last number of years is moves by government to address that. And the good news is, Chris, we have seen that. So the amount of resources that have been invested in on board Planola, which is now called Uncommissioned Planola, has significantly increased. The government has established a planning and environmental court, so a court dedicated to these kind of planning and consenting issues, the judicial reviews you mentioned. So what we've seen in that is the timelines for planning decisions have started to come down. We've seen that the timelines for judicial reviews to be heard and for decisions to be made has also started to come down. I'd say it's still early days in that. We've only kind of started to see the improvement in the last 6-7 months. So we'd like to make sure that this is a trend that's going to continue. But if it does continue, hopefully we'll start to see the timelines for projects to get planning permission come down. And that's really critically important, not just to deliver the projects, but to deliver the projects at the best possible price. The more it costs to build a wind farm, the more the person who builds the wind farm has to charge for the electricity they can produce. If we can find a way to make Ireland a country that is attractive, where we can build wind farms more affordably, then we can provide more affordable power from them.
And fair to say that there is still considerable potential in Donegal for more onshore development. We will see more wind farms. And I suppose there's been a learning curve. There has been issues in certain areas. People have objected. But over time, no doubt lessons have been learned by all sides involved in the industry. And that must be a positive.
No, it certainly is. And I think it is something that we've focused on quite significantly in Wind Energy Ireland, which is to try and ensure that we're improving how we engage the local communities, that we're providing, not just providing information, but providing it as accessibly as we possibly can to be engaging with people more on a face-to-face basis. You're absolutely right. There are people who would still have concerns, but you know that's legitimate. If people hear a new infrastructure that they might not be familiar with is being built in their area, they're going to have concerns. And it's up to us as an industry to try and address those concerns, to try and meet communities halfway, to try and see how we can build and design the project in a way that is as helpful as possible for people in the community to accommodate themselves to the technology. We've also seen some really good initiatives from government. They've increased the community benefit funds that would be required from new built wind farms, and they've also taken control of those community benefit funds and decided they would be in the hands of the community rather than the person who's owning the wind farm. So those are really positive measures as well.
Now, if I can turn to the whole area of offshore development, you touched on the Arklow Bank there. There are a number of projects that we're going to see off to south and the east coast. Longer term, there is an expectation that eventually we will see offshore development on the western coast. Just explain to us the different types of structures, because some of them would be with the wind turbines floating, and some they might be actually anchored to the ground. So there's different options there.
There are. So the wind the offshore wind turbine that we would use for the vast majority of projects we develop, it's called a fixed bottom wind turbine. And the reason it's called that is because the bottom of the turbine is literally fixed into the seabed. So simplifying it a little bit here, but it's like a very large onshore wind turbine, but instead of being planted in land, it's been planted in seabed. So that's the most affordable way to develop new offshore wind energy. It's a technology we're very familiar with. It's the technology we'll be using on the East Coast, but it does have a drawback. And the drawback is that ideally you want to be using that in an area where the seabed depth is maybe 30 to 40 metres. The deepest I think we've ever gone is just under 60 metres. And the challenge we have, particularly on the west coast of Ireland, is that the seabed gets deep very, very quickly as we move out towards the Atlantic. There are actually very few locations on Ireland's west coast and the northwest coast where you could use fixed bottom turbines. So the technology for deeper waters is called a floating wind turbine. So what you have there is you have a platform that floats on top of the sea. The turbine is built onto the platform, and then the platform is secured to the seabed by a series of mooring ropes and anchors. It's a very effective technology. We use it in a number of different countries. There's two challenges we're still trying to work out with it. The first is it's a lot more expensive than the fixed bottom projects. So how can we find a way not just to do this, but to reduce the price of how we do it and make sure that the projects are developing and electricity at an affordable price. The second challenge is one that is particular to the Irish West Coast. We have very, very significant waves out there. You have waves up to 25, 30 metres high. How do you ensure that your turbine platform is stable in that situation? And this is one of the things that Wind Energy Ireland has been working with the SEI and with other project partners to try and determine what's the best foundation to use for a floating offshore wind farm. What's the best mooring system, the best anchor system? We need to be able to ensure that what we're building out there is going to be safe and that it's going to provide electricity at an affordable price. And that's what we're really focused on. So we've, I think, four or five different research projects on the way at the moment with Irish academic third level institutions, with industry partners, as I said, funded by the SEI, and there's funding in there from Europe as well, to try and find ways to do this. So we will do it, Chris. I absolutely no doubt we will be building floating wind farms off the west and the northwest coast of Ireland, because the wind resource there is a massive, massive opportunity for this country. It will take a little bit more time because we need to make sure the technology, which right now we know works, but has been tried in calmer waters, that it can work off the west coast and the northwest coast of Ireland.
And I take it you have to involve the various stakeholders. I think there was a report last year or maybe the year before, the Killybegs Fishermen's Organisation had linked in. I think it might have been a Swedish company, and they were looking at the Donegal Bay area. So there is a lot going on behind the scenes, and it really is a case of bringing people together.
It really is, and I think the big opportunity there for people and for everyone listening to you and I have this conversation is that in the next year, next 18 months, the government is going to start to develop what's called a National Designated Maritime Area Plan. So what that basically is they're going to map Ireland's maritime area, including off the coast of Killybegs, off the coast of every coastal county in Ireland, and they're going to identify the sites that are available in which to build offshore wind farms. So it's not going to be the situation where somebody who wants to develop a wind farm just wanders out off into the ocean and picks a spot. They will only be able to develop those wind farms in spots identified through this mapping process. And one of the things that is going to be critical to ensuring that mapping process is done right is for really, really engaged and empowered engagement with local communities, with fishermen who know those seas and those seabeds better than anyone, with people who are concerned about environmental issues off the coast of Ireland, with people who live in coastal communities, with business people. Those are the people we're going to be needing to listen to and to understand the concerns of, and to feed that information into the process, so that when that map is complete, and the government aims to complete that map by the end of 2027, there has been a participative process that has gone through. People have had the opportunity to speak. They have been listened to. They can see that their ideas and their suggestions were incorporated into the plan. And what will come out of that is a number of different sites around the coast of Ireland where wind farms have been identified as suitable to be built in that area. And then from that point on, I suppose that's when we start in our industry, and we start to develop those sites and to build the infrastructure.
You're listening to Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. My guest this week is Justin Moran, Director of External Affairs with Wind Energy Ireland.
Now, tell me a little bit about the actual wind turbines themselves. When it comes to importing them and the assembly, there are already some places around the country. I know I've seen down in Killybegs turbines in the quay down there. I think, am I right in saying Harland and Wolfe in Belfast, there was some assembly work going up there. Where are we at in with regard to that side of things?
Well, for onshore turbines, we unfortunately don't have any domestic manufacturing capability. So the all of the wind turbines that you see when you're driving around Donegal were imported into Ireland one way or another. Often a lot of them would have gone through Killybegs port, and then we would have other ports like Waterford, Shannon Foynes, Port of Cork, Port of Galway, where the turbines come in. So they would typically be manufactured by European companies like Vestas, like Enercon, like Nordex, which would have very significant investments here in Ireland. For offshore wind farms, the turbine would also be coming from abroad. But one of the challenges is that we don't have any port facility in the Irish Republic that can be used. We don't have, the quays aren't strong enough, coach isn't deep enough. We do have a great facility in Belfast, and Belfast has been used, as you mentioned there a moment ago, for assembly activity, for construction activity to support the development of offshore wind energy. But one of the things that we're very keen to see happen in our industry is to see that we invest in port infrastructure so that we have other ports available. Because if you have a situation where you have, you know, two, maybe three offshore wind farms trying to be built at the same time, it would be a real challenge to build a single port at Belfast, so you need other options. And I think the other advantage to that is it ensures that the investment that comes from building these offshore wind farms stays in Ireland. We're very, very determined and very keen to see Irish offshore wind farms built from Irish ports. We have one great port in Belfast, but we need other options. And if we don't have those options, Chris, we would need to look at building offshore wind farms maybe from the northwest coast of France, maybe Cherbourg, or maybe from Wales. And then we see the investment for the construction part of those projects go to other countries, and that's something we'd be keen to avoid.
So there could be considerable employment stemming from this, of course. Where do we rank in terms of our European neighbours? Is it the Danes that are leading the way when it comes to wind energy, particularly offshore in the EU?
Well, it's actually us, believe it or not. So we are number one for the share of electricity demand that comes from onshore wind energy. We're even ahead of Denmark. No other country in Europe gets more of their power from onshore wind energy than we do. But when you bring offshore into account, because we don't have any of those projects, we fall to second position. So when you add Denmark's offshore wind energy infrastructure, they get, I think it's something like 50% of their power, maybe more, from their onshore and their offshore wind farms combined. We're a bit further behind that. But I do think it is a bit of a success story that Irish companies, Irish businesses, that Irish agencies like ESB Networks and Airgrid have been able to support the construction, the development of what has been a really, really big success story, frankly, for Ireland from an energy point of view, and makes us a country that is genuinely recognised outside of Ireland as a leader in onshore wind energy, and hopefully one day a leader in offshore wind energy too.
And how important is it for the whole sector to liaise with third-level institutions, the likes of the Atlantic Technology University here in Letterkenny and in Galway and in the West, and to bring on the skilled workforce that you're going to need for those various skills that are going to be coming down the track?
I think it's always been important, and it's always something that we've been doing, but I think the development of offshore wind energy makes it far, far more important and a bigger priority for us. We're very proud that ATU is one of our partners on one of the research projects we're doing, which is looking at the anchoring and mooring systems for floating offshore wind. We're partnering with other institutions around the country as well. And part of this is about designing the courses and designing the training that needs to be completed to enable people to participate in offshore wind energy. So we're very proud to be working with the government's SkillNet Ireland programme to have established SkillNet Offshore Wind Academy. And if any of your listeners are interested, please do Google for that, SkillNet Offshore Wind Academy. And this is about training and supporting people who wish to work in offshore wind energy. Maybe they work in another sector at the moment and they'd like to transfer. Maybe they have skills that are transferable. We're going to need people who are engineers. We're going to need electricians. We're going to need people who can crew transfer vessels. We're going to need environmental planners. We're going to need marine biologists. There's an enormous amount of skills that are going to be needed. And in order to do that, we need to work with universities to ensure that the courses and the training is provided to enable people to get the qualifications they need to be part of this. Because if you think of an offshore wind farm, once it is built and constructed, that will be providing jobs to, depending on the size of the wind farm, between 60 and 80 people for, you know, 25, 30, 40 years, however long the offshore wind farm is out there. And those will be really good jobs in an industry that's going to only grow. Construction of the wind farms is also going to need those particular sets of skills as well. So we're really keen to try and ensure that as much as possible, Irish workers get the opportunities, Irish businesses get the opportunities to bid and to compete for the contracts for those Irish offshore wind farms. This isn't just about, this isn't just an energy strategy, this isn't just a decarbonisation strategy, this is an economic strategy for Ireland and particularly for rural communities and coastal communities.
Justin, we hear a lot about data centres and the amount of power that they use at the moment in this country. Some of them are actually doing deals to get their wind or to get their energy supplied from wind farms. Could you just elaborate on what exactly is going on in that regard?
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated, but basically what's happening is in some cases, if somebody is looking to develop a wind farm, they might do a deal with a large energy user. Now, they're not always data centres, but they often would be. And what the data centre company is trying to do there is it's trying to ensure that the electricity that it's using is decarbonised. So what it will do is it will reach an agreement with a wind farm. The wind farm doesn't have to be located near the data centre, just to be clear. But the way that it works is the data centre might have a certain level of electricity demand. And what they will do is they will pay the wind farm to produce that amount of electricity, which will go onto the electricity grid. Now, the electrons that go to the data center are the same as anyone else's. They're not coming specifically from that wind farm. But because the amount of electricity that the data center is using is matched by the amount of clean energy produced by the wind farm, then they're able to very legitimately say that they're paying for clean energy to come on, which matches the amount of electricity that they need for the construction or the data centre that they do. The big advantage to corporate power purchase agreements from an Irish electricity consumer point of view is it means we get more projects built. It means we get them built more affordably. It means there's no pressure on the PSO levy or anything like that because these wind farms are funded by the large energy user. And it means that we can get one step closer towards energy independence and reducing our reliance on imported gas. Lots of other projects go through something called the Renewable Electricity Support Scheme. This is the state-backed scheme, which I think is probably most projects are going that route at this stage, but a significant number are going the route where they sign those corporate power purchase agreements. And what we need is to be trying to get both of those systems to be working as effectively and as efficiently as possible to connect as much power as we can.
Very interesting. Now, if we look at the wind farms, say, scattered around a county like Donegal, Justin, just to explain to our listeners, who owns these wind farms? Are there one or two companies who would own the majority of them? Are there lots of individuals or some community-led? Can you enlighten us on that?
Unfortunately, I wouldn't at the top of my head have specific numbers for Donegal specifically on that. I think if you were talking nationally, and I suspect Donegal is similar enough to this, you're looking at companies like ESB, for example, like SSE Renewables, Energia, you're looking at Bordamona, you're looking at Statcraft. So a kind of combination of Irish companies and companies from outside of Ireland that you would see owning these wind farms. We don't, unfortunately, have a very large amount of community-owned wind farms. We have one in Temple Derry in Tipperary. Now, the government is moving forward at the minute with something called a support scheme for small renewable energy producers. That's targeted at small wind farms that would be owned and operated by local businesses or by local community groups. It's also targeted solar, and I think we'll probably be more take up on the solar side. But we'd be very keen to try and see communities have the opportunity to develop their own green energy, to have control over their green energy and to decide what they want to do with it, whether they want to do that with solar power, whether they want to do that with wind power. I think it'll vary from each community, but we do need to see them given the support and the training that they need to enable them to build those projects, because building a wind farm or a solar farm, it's not a simple project. Connecting to the electricity grid is very, very challenging and can be very, very expensive. So what can we do to support communities to do that, to make it cheaper for communities to do that?
Now, I want to ask you about the way the industry has evolved, technology advancing all the time. If you look at some of the wind farms that are going up now, and we've turbines that are going up, and this mightn't mean too much to a lot of people, but the capacity of these turbines can now be 2 or 3 megawatts. If we go back to the first wind farms in Donegal, am I right in saying they might have been maybe 150, 200, 300 kilowatts? So the turbines out there are far more productive than the ones of 20, 30 years ago. What happens to the older machines? Can they keep the actual pylons and actually replace the heads of them with newer equipment?
Well, no, first of all, you're absolutely right that the technology has improved dramatically. I think one example that I often use is the proposal at the moment to repower Barnsmore, the wind farm that you mentioned there at the beginning of our conversation. I think the proposal there will see the number of wind turbines reduced from 25 to 13, so half the number of wind turbines, but the power output from that wind farm will quadruple, and that's because you're using much more effective, much more modern turbines that are able to produce significantly more power, and that also has really strong benefits from an environmental point of view in terms of the impact of developing the projects. For the older wind turbines, we still, Ballycarrick, the oldest wind farm in Ireland, went operational in 1992. Those turbines are still operating. They are coming pretty close to their end of life, though. And what you would be looking to be thinking about there, if you're somebody who owned a wind farm, is really one of two options. The first is you would decommission it, which is where you take the turbines down and you recycle them to the extent that you can. Most of a wind turbine is easily recyclable because it's made out of steel, and that's the most commonly recycled substance in the world, I think. And then with wind turbine blades, that can be more challenging. You might need to find ways to reuse those or to recycle them in some other fashion. And then you might choose to repower the site. So this is where you keep the existing grid connection and you build, as they look to do in Barnsmore, new, more modern turbines on the same site. And in some cases, you might not be able to do that. So you might, for example, have built a wind farm maybe 15, 20, 30 years ago, and now it's coming to the end of its life, and it's just not possible to repower in that area. So in that case, as I said, you would decommission the wind turbines and you would try and restore the land on which the wind farms were built in as much as you possibly can, working with the local landowner to do that.
Justin, you are Director of External Affairs with Wind Energy Ireland. Perhaps you can just outline the reasons why Wind Energy Ireland was set up and who it represents, and essentially what does the organisation do?
Well, in a simple sentence, we're the trade association for the Irish wind energy industry. So we represent the whole supply chain. So people, I think, would probably understand we represent the people who build and own and operate wind farms. We represent the people who build wind turbines. What people might not be as familiar with is we represent the entire supply chain. So we represent the ports, we represent the transport companies who move the turbines around. We represent planning companies, legal companies, banks who finance the wind farms. So the entire supply chain from beginning to end. A little bit over 200 members, and currently in Ireland employing around 5,000 people, which is a number, obviously, once we start to see offshore wind energy take off, we would expect to see that grow significantly, and making, a fairly significant contribution to the Irish economy, and as we discussed earlier on, a very, very significant contribution to Irish energy systems.
And for somebody who maybe wants to delve into matters a little more, find out a little bit more, your website, windenergyireland.com, plenty of information there, some great graphics, and you've a breakdown, for example, of wind energy by county, so it's a good way of getting a snapshot of things.
Yeah, I'd really recommend the County Colours section of the website, which as exactly as you said, the amount of electricity produced by each individual county, but the amount of investments that's gone into those counties and paid in commercial rates as well. Please do go onto our website to find more information. And if there's anyone here interested in a career in the industry, particularly young people, I'd also recommend workinwind.ie, which is a website that we have profiling the different careers options, the different skills you need, the different kind of courses you would need to be doing. And even if you don't know what kind of area you would be of interest, go onto the website anyway. We have a quiz there that will help you try and identify the area that we, you know, might be most suitable for you if you wanted to work in onshore or offshore wind energy.
And finally, Justin, just looking at government policy, we hear a lot at the moment about investment in infrastructure that's coming down the track, hopefully in the next number of years. In a nutshell, what does Wind Energy Ireland want the government to do to accelerate the development of the whole wind energy sector?
Well, I have to say, one of the things we would have been looking for some time, the government recently announced, and it was a very positive development when the government was looking at the revised National Development Plan and they announced €3.5 billion of investment into our electricity grid. That's important not just to connect wind farms, that's important not just to ensure that we stop wasting energy, which we're doing at the moment, but that's also important to build a resilient electricity network. I'm sure many of your listeners were affected by some of the storms earlier in the year. We need to try and ensure that our electricity grid, both the one servicing wind farms and the one servicing local households and families, is as strong as we possibly can. So seeing that funding going in there is critical. I think I'd also be saying that we still need to see funding in the Ireland system. It does look like it is improving, but it's still not what it needs to be. You need organisations like the county councils and the planning departments there. You need organisations like National Parks and Wildlife Service to be funded up and to be resourced and have the expertise that they can try and ensure those projects get through. Because we need to get those projects through the planning system fast, but we can't get them through at the expense of being robustly and thoroughly and honestly scrutinised by people who are experts in the field. So there can't be any shortcuts here. It needs to be done right and it needs to be done properly. And for that to happen, you need resources.
And we have had, I think June was the best on record for Irish wind farms. I see on your website, it's a simple little graphic and it puts it very straightforward. 1 in 3 cups of tea, that's 1 in 3 cups of tea are coming from wind energy, in effect.
Yeah, we're very proud of that. And, you know, I think it helps people to understand a little bit more. You know, we can often talk about megawatts and gigawatts of electricity, but the best way to think about it is, you know, when you're every third cup of tea that you brew is probably going to be coming from wind farms, going to be coming from onshore wind farms, and increasingly solar power, which has really grown dramatically, I think, in the last couple of years and is going to accelerate in time to come. So, you know, we're at the beginning of a long road, and where we get to is an Ireland that is energy independent with cleaner and more affordable electricity for Irish families, for Irish businesses. You know, we're spending approximately €1 million every hour leaving this country to import fossil fuels. We want that money staying in Ireland. We make no apologies for that. And in order to do that, we need to develop renewable energy. We need to improve the planning system. We need to strengthen our electricity grid. Those are all things we can and should and must and will do.
So great potential out there. Roughly a third of our electricity coming from renewable resources such as wind. That figure could increase considerably. And I take it, just rounding off, Justin, I mean, we could end up being a net exporter of electricity.
We certainly can. We're going to have enough wind energy potential to produce far more electricity than we could use and that we could therefore export. I do think one of the challenges, and it goes back to something I've touched on a couple of times, is if we're going to do that, we need to find ways to produce that electricity more affordably. Because when you're trying to export electricity out of a country, you need a power line, you need a cable connecting you to the other countries. So we're connected to the British electricity market at the minute. We'll be connected to the French electricity market from 2028. But if electricity prices there are lower than electricity prices in Ireland, they won't want to buy our electricity. And why would they if they can produce that electricity more affordably than we can? So one of the big focuses we will be looking for from government is to work with us to find ways to develop renewable energy in Ireland more cheaply so that we can produce electricity that is more affordable and we can take advantage of that export opportunity that you mentioned.
And that was Justin Moran, Wind Energy Ireland's Director of External Affairs. Well, that's it for this edition of Business Matters here in Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. As always, many thanks for listening, and may I wish you a healthy, happy and profitable week ahead. Until the next time, goodbye.